Okay, let's just have a little look at what we're going to do for the rest of the weekend before we go off to our lunch. The focus in a way for this weekend is to really look at the process of transition and transformation. In a way, it's stepping back and taking an overview, really, about what is this course about. It began with us looking at this idea, this Welsh idea of Tao, which is this sense of inner stillness that in Welsh tradition is like the stillness of a river running at night, or the stillness of melting ice. So it has this idea of stillness and movement, and the idea of depth within it. And that if we cooperate with that inner stillness, that there's also movement. What starts to happen is things start to change within us and around us. And the looked at this model of the body of flesh, body of dream, and body of mystery, as one of many models. It's about what happens when you start to pay attention differently. Because if we're going to change, or if we're going to transition or enable something to happen, we have to start using our attention differently. Because if we don't, there's a sort of mechanical aspect of human life where we just repeat things. And in a way, that's a functional thing. It's partly how it's how do you learn things? How do you learn as a child? Well, you learn, you do something quite consciously, and you repeat it until it becomes habitual and unconscious. This is how we acquire skill. This my recent process of paying attention to the skill of filling and emptying my bladder, and having to make that a much more conscious process, is a really quite an uncomfortable thing, because normally it just does its thing. I learned as a child to toilet myself. I learned to pee and not pee, to shit and not shit, and that's a very so it becomes something I don't have to think about normally. Until that kind of balance is disturbed. Now, that's obviously a very fundamental layer. But transformation of whatever kind, change of whatever kind, always involves a degree of disturbance, because in order for something to be different, you have to engage with that mechanical aspect of human life. And it's also a kind of process of reclaiming somewhere as well, because one of the things that happens in, if you like, that process of becoming ourselves, becoming who we think we are, is it's by and large, it's a process that happens to us unconsciously through life events, through the experience of other. As a child, we're around the others who are more powerful than us. And we learn who we're going to be, mostly from things coming towards us and telling us who we are and us reacting to that. And it's just an amalgam, really, of our own will and our own creativity, and the energy and the creativity of the world that we find around us. So we get, if you like, to create this image of ourselves and the image of the world that's interlocked together. And in a sense, that phrase that people will often say, well, that's who I am. They often make this little gesture with their bodies, which kind of sort of self-assertive gesture, well, I am who I am, and fuck everything else. But that statement, of course, is a sort of a statement in some ways that's... slightly aggressive, slightly angry, slightly I can't change, because normally when people say I am or am, it's in response to people saying, well, why can't you stop doing that? Can't you be nicer? Can't you be more present? I'm who I am. It's a bit like, just who I am. It's a bit like that. You can feel it in the body kind of gesture, I'm not going to change. Why should I change? You change. And it's a sort of,
Your problem,
but underneath it, there's a sort of slightly depressive kind of idea that means I can't change. change is impossible for me. You just got to put up with it, and I've got to put up with it. So you've got to put up with it. I've got to put up with who I am, how the world is. So you've got to put up with me. Now, in a way, the therapists. I mean, that's often where people just come in from. They come in wanting to be told that they're right, or wanting to be told that the world is wrong, or be affirmed and supported in some way. And it's why, in a way, therapy is quite a difficult process for people, because actually one of the things that they discover is that isn't what comes back at them. In decent therapy, people are challenged, and the particular the first challenge, in a way, or the first movement in transition, is to start to turn away from that interlocked relationship with the outside world. To turn, in effect, inward.
So
the first movement of change, in a way, is the ability to start to turn away from that interlocked relationship with the outside world, where there is no choice and no space for choice. If anyone has watched Trump in Davos, it's amazing. It's amazing. I mean, this is a man who totally lives in that interlocked world. So suddenly, people are liking him in Davos, and he's being nice to this man. He's been vilifying everybody at Davos. And this is a global elite, and I love watching Trump. I've become fascinated by him, because he completely shows to me that aspect of human nature, where if somebody likes him, he's suddenly nice to them, and he says encouraging things. There's this bizarre little spell. Of course, he represents the most powerful country on earth, so of course people are going to want to be nice to him, but you see this weird interlocked thing, where this man who's been vilifying them all and is saying, "Oh no, I don't mean we're going to be on our own. I don't mean we're going to isolate from you, because we are with you, and maybe what's good for us is good for you." And this is a guy who spent the last couple of years, America first, fuck the global order. They're the swamp. But put him in front of people. This is a man who's. Self-image is built in needing to be admired, needing to be loved, needing to be wanted. So, of course, he has no control over that. And you see it in the tweets, I think. He has no control over it, and in a way, it's interesting, Trump, because he represents that aspect of ourselves, that part where in a way it represents that aspect of the child in us who has to please the other, who has to fit in, has to survive somewhere. And doesn't have any agency in that. So always the first movement of change is the ability to start turning away from that heart, because you have to sort of come into your own sovereignty, your own sense of responsibility. You have to turn away from that hypnotic fascination with how we believe things are. And what happens, in a sense, is as we start to do that, is that we start to, in a way, we start to step into the kind of world of subjectivity. We start to become and the world of actual presence, becoming it's where the body is the great kind of aid in us, in that if we can. Because in a certain sense, when you're facing outwards like that, you're actually a little distance away from your body. You're in this hypnotized kind of vision of yourself and vision of the world. As you come into a sense of body, even if you start to locate yourself, you start to become present. And that even slight idea of presence starts to create space. Now, what happens as you start to do that, as you start to become aware of subjectivity as an actual active energy, that you can relate to and therefore start to work with from this place of slight degree of presence, the first thing that you encounter really is this jumble of thought, memory, image, feelings, and you start to experience it as a dialogue, as a not so much a thing that's set in stone and this is how I am. So, and isn't that you get a very clear sense of that dialogue? You just get a sense of something moving that creates all this. And in a sense, it's looking at this image of the Tree of Life I put up here. The first movement, in a sense, is coming into they call it coming into the kingdom, which means coming into a sense of sovereignty, being aware of your body and being aware of the world as something that has presence. So as we get present to ourselves and our senses, we get present to the mysterious aspect of the body and to a certain extent the mysterious and unfathomable aspect of the world. So rather than being a given thing, I know how life is, I know how I am, we start to touch something that is present and then has infinite potential. Not that you even know that at first, but you get a flavour, an echo of it. And then as you do that, you start to become aware of life as a process. Process of the universe, the process of yourself. And what you start to experience, first of all, is this continual kind of internal dialogue that recreates the present in terms of the past, that keeps things stable. There's this phrase, yes, or the foundation for that aspect of ourselves. That is the thing that's underneath the apparent stability is a moving dialogue. I mean, the Buddha uses this image a lot. He talks about the self being like a wheel of fire created by spinning a torch very fast at night. You know, because what you actually see, you do not see the spinning of the torch, you see a continuous wheel of fire, and if you touch it, it will feel like a solid wheel of fire. But it is about momentum. So in a sense, that the second movement, in a sense, and the second aspect of transformation is the ability to, in some way or other, to stop the dialogue, to stop the turning wheel. We may do that for seconds, or we may just glimpse that. But the potential, in a sense, of turning inwards and encountering this kind of spinning wheel of self and world is that actually as we get quieter and as we become more focused inwardly, we start to see through the illusion of the solidity of things. And that's the illusion of solidity of self and solidity of world. So the world, so this interlocked process where the world and ourselves start to become less solid and more a moving process. The more we experience that, and the better we get at, if you like, stopping that dialogue or seeing through that dialogue, it brings us into this sense of witnessing and presence. We can start to pierce this veil, really, which is formed. Veil is formed by this continuous momentum that creates this idea of solid, immovable things. The more that veil is penetrated by awareness, we start to enter into that kind of sense of witnessing kind of presence. And our main task when that happens is to maintain a sense of balance. Because what happens is we enter into this dynamic sense of self, dynamic sense of universe. And that's a bit overwhelming. Because things that we thought are solid are no longer so solid. So the key part of that, the stage of transformation, is to maintain balance and presence in the midst of changing mysterious things. And the task, in a way, is to keep balancing opposites, to go from one extreme to the other, to in a sense, to balance the outrageous experience of being Batman and being a person and caring for your client. Or to balance the image of having a house with its own consulting room and looking out my window. Right, so these, so what gets presented to us are, as we engage with the dynamic, are all kinds of different opposites and dilemmas. And the task, in a sense, of this next stage is in a sense, it's a bit like you sit with it, you be with the dilemmas. You don't choose one if you choose one side over the other prematurely, until it reaches balance and stillness. Then we set a whole other dynamic going. Now, in Kabbalah, they have this idea that, that linked to that capacity of presence, you're working with these two energies all the time: the energy of love, the energy to that's a bit like the cup or the chalice that can contain and can accept things, and the other energy is the energy of clarity. That's the sword that cuts through. So, and these are two very different energies. The energy of the sword is very cutting, very clear, very sharp. The energy of the, of love is very warm and welcoming in. And to find the capacity then to balance these two. So, underneath all the different dilemmas that they would say that we encounter as we enter into this kind of deeper place, you find these two energies at work. The energy and having to welcome and accept things, and at the same time be clear and find directionality within that. Because if we have the chalice without the sword, we kind of sit in a kind of a swamp, really, where we lose it. We're just taking on and taking on. If we have the sword without the cup, we then just keep cutting things away, and we end up in an isolated kind of place. So to bring together the energies of clarity, sharpness, and compassion and love, and therefore the ability to be with others and to be alone, is really part of that, really kind of a key part of this process. The final stage, if you like, in this model of transformation we hit, having established this, is as we establish ourselves there, we start then to find ourselves touching something even deeper, which I've called the door of mystery, which is a deeper kind of surrender, because even this capacity to be witness is a place where we are, is an activity. This is the next stage that hits us as we in a way become established in this and expert in this, is we have to let go of all this, because the ability to be the witness who can find balance, who can keep working with things, is in itself an outer image and a kind of conscious process. For that to become, if you like, truly skilled at that, it has to become a more spontaneous, less willful process. And the way that happens is by just letting go. It's a terrible New Age word. Surrender is another word. What in practice starts to happen is that place of being the witness, being the person who holds balance and holds integrity, starts to vanish. And you find yourself doing things spontaneously. So there's a sort of, the Chinese have an excellent word for this called wei wu wei, the action of non-action, that the spontaneous action of the empty hand, they call it, where you just find things happening. You know, the Chinese talk about this as the movement of the Tao. The Welsh bards talk about it as that melting ice, the river flowing at night, where knowing and even presence itself, knowing I am present, is a barrier to that deeper experience. Because in that deeper experience, the level you touch there is that there are no opposites. Opposites are united. And there is a sort of mystique, and all you do is you are a vessel for something that you also are. You're not separate from.
Sort of grail.
You are, that is what being the grail is ultimately. You are literally the grail. You are the light and the vessel that holds the light, and then there is this pure spontaneity that happens in you and around you.
Jumping into the lake to save the child.
That's right. It just happens. You just do it.
Why did the opposites disappear? I'm just intrigued at that movement.
That movement, they disappear because you become not separate. In order for the opposites to be there, there has to be a sense of you and the... So if you take the kind of the very simple version of this, right? Should I do something? Should I not? I want to do something. I don't want to do something, right? So in the place of being kind of present, you sit with it, you feel into it, and eventually something shifts. In that kind of deeper stage, possibilities emerge, and they're not configured as opposites. You just do something. So there isn't that kind of resistance in us. So I could do this, I could do that, I'll do this. It's like that. Whereas the other thing is more, I'm sitting with this, what is true, what is right. Okay, I sit with it. So this is a sort of a deeper place of surrender where creative possibilities emerge. And if you like, your trust in that deeper kind of flow takes you into something seamlessly. There isn't the struggle, there isn't the resistance, there's a sort of commitment to the flow. That you don't stop it going in whatever direction it needs to go in.
So do you sort of lose the opposites because you lose the tension between the opposites?
Yeah, that's right. There isn't a tension in that. They exist as possibilities, as creative possibilities, and you find yourself moving towards one of them. So that dynamic of tension, which is, it just vanishes.
What can I find in that kind of... It's sort of those opposites, I find personally, can actually be too containing in a way. Because what I found with the dilemma of the house is that I had, you know, sort of like, well, I was thinking about the advantages of living in a stay in my flat, advantages of moving into the house, the pressure of moving into the house because it made sense, the rational sense.
Yeah.
But what I found is that they were contained somehow. They were sort of kind of formed.
Yeah.
What I was quite surprised with was something came in from the side.
Yeah, that's right.
When I was just walking through the woods to meeting somebody.
Yeah.
And I was just starting to relax. And then it's something kind of like unraveled itself.
Yeah.
Where I thought, actually, I could have the point about having the surplus money and having pleasure.
Yeah.
Those opposites weren't containing.
That's a really good example of working with the opposites, right? Because what happens is that you hold those opposites instead of choosing one or just staying with the dilemma. Then something shifts, something emerges, and so that's a really good example of that middle place. In the deeper place, when dilemmas arise, they don't arise as dilemmas. Right, so they're just possibilities, and you just find yourself flowing with them. In that middle place, there's a tension, as Ali said. What you have to do is work with the tension until something relaxes.
Yeah.
Right, and then the creative solution emerges because something new comes in.
Yeah.
And I think that there's a whole kind of it's a very necessary process. That until we get to the place where we relax more deeply, and when we touch that deeper place, we're then at that deeper place where something is just flowing.
Yeah.
Okay, and it's interesting when that happens, because that whole dynamic that you've been sitting with just isn't in existence anymore.
Yeah.
There's no choice. So you just do it. Oh, this is I'm doing. Yeah. Doing this. This is what I'm doing.
Mm-hmm. And then I've had a dilemma, not recently, but I just couldn't decide what to do. And
yeah.
For years and years and years.
Yeah.
And like you, wasn't contained in the dilemma. It was something totally different. And someone else, I realised something, and then
I asked myself, do you want that? And I went, that's what I want.
Yeah.
The whole thing
changed. No, that's right.
So that's quite,
yeah, no, that's exactly the sort of thing that happens, I think. I think with these deep dilemmas, if you work with it like that, is often, it's, I mean, the solution comes from this deeper layer. And what's interesting when that deeper thing kicks in, there is not conflict. The conflict is gone.
Mm.
Right? So the opposites are resolved in that moment. Mm. And actually then find yourself moving in a new way. So that's what we're going to look at this weekend. So that's just a little precy just to get us thinking about it. Mm-hmm. Let's go and go for our lunch.
And so the mystery was finding the third thing. Sorry, I'm quite finished with this.
Yeah.
It was, how do you find the third thing? That's
well, the thing is,
get out of the way.
You get out of the way, but you can only get out of the way by being with whatever you're with. Yeah. This place of being with that tension, that dilemma, being bored with yourself, fed up with it. You know, these big dilemmas are going on in all our life, if you like. You know, you weigh yourself out, and something deeper then can kick through. I think that's kind of what happens. You get bored with yourself, and something subtle shifts then. And it is amazing, that thing, because it does feel like it's coming out of nowhere, because it's coming from somewhere deeper that we haven't got conscious access to. Right? So it feels like it's coming from somewhere else. It's actually coming from the deeper aspect of ourselves.
It was new in
the moment that you knew it. It was new. It was made new. Right?
It's
because it because that's the extraordinary thing, I think. Yeah.
The crazy thing is there all the time, isn't it?